This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Lot to do today, guys. Lot going on. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing good, Dave, but probably not in the mood that you're in today with the news that you got from the Knicks last night and also the news about Robinson Cano. So, I mean, as a Knicks and as a Mets fan, you got to be feeling pretty good today.
I feel great. I got to be honest. We'll say good morning to Rick in a second. I think the best news I got all day was the Robinson Cano suspension.
Stop it.
Made me feel even better than what the Knicks did last night.
Stop it.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning, David. A little anxious. Going back and forth on Thursday Night Football. I thought I loved the pick, and then got R.J. Bell tweeting things and everything else. A little bit nervous, but still might get involved. Happy with what the Knicks did. Robinson Cano making a poor decision, to say the very least. But it actually works out. Bad for him. Works out for us. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. He's got more money to spend now. Got to love that.
Rico, yep. If it turns out that the altercation between Colombo and Judge was physical, what's a worse decision? Cano on PEDs or Judge running up on Colombo?
Who?
Either fighting Joe Judge's.
Yeah, I don't like Joe Judge's chances. I do not like Joe Judge's chances.
So that's a worse decision.
That would be a bad decision. Yeah.
Terrible decision. Although from all accounts, and we'll hear from
not all accounts in about 30 minutes. Jason McIntyre from Fox.
Well, yeah, and everyone else said it's just not true.
Well, I mean, I don't know, man. The way that everything unfolded yesterday, we'll get into it.
Yep.
But it just seems like the Giants tried to bury the story, and there was more to it than just them firing Colombo for performance reasons.
Yeah. We'll get into it. Jordan's going to have all the latest. We'll get into that with him at 9:30. We're going to lead with the Knicks. But there's something that, and I just found this out, Rick. I had intellectual property stolen from me. Stolen. Ripped right out from my hands.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time. I mean, you've done that to a couple of callers, too. I mean, you tend to be Hack Sparrow occasionally.
It was my take. Chris, did you see this on Get Up this morning? Big topic. Slug on the bottom. Are the Jets in better position long-term than the Bears?
Oh, yeah, they hustled that from you, Dave.
That was mine.
Not really. It's the ESPN airwaves, so it's theirs.
Once I throw it out there, it's everyone can use it?
Yeah, it's the companies. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just the reality of it, Dave.
I better trademark some of my things.
Yeah, we're like minor league baseball, Dave. This 2 hours is like this is just where we have takes that we throw back and forth. And if anyone in national feels like they're decent takes,
they listen, and then they like them, and then they take them.
And then it makes it seem like we pirated what they did.
But that's not who we are. We're not the pirate. That's the one thing we can say with 100% certainty. That's not who we are.
No. We spent 5+ minutes on Monday discussing who's in better shape long term than
we are not the premature pirates. That's not who we are.
No, certainly not. All right. So, I mean, you like it, right? Rick, you have to feel good about what the Knicks did. They got the guy they wanted, and they didn't have to move up to get him. And he's a New York kid and says all the right things, and it was a terrific college player and has some experience. And you have to feel good about what the Knicks did last night.
I think you feel great. And they also gave themselves the opportunity that if they did have to go up to 5 and make a deal, they could have done that too. I was just sitting there looking at my phone. The more I talked to people after our show, the more I realized that it was Toppin that they wanted to take in this draft. Mm-hmm. He's a Brooklyn kid. It seems like a great fit. I mean, New York Knicks fans have seen him play, have heard about him. So, I mean, this seemed like the guy. And then I'm just staring at Woj's Twitter account. Like, please, please do not have him going 7. Do not have him going 7. And we lucked out. We got him. And I actually liked him more after seeing him, you know, after the pick and how he reacted to it. Like, this means a lot to this kid. And he's 22 years old. So he's older than a lot of these guys that are being drafted, more mature. And, I mean, he's got New York roots. I don't know how you don't like the pick.
How about Woj and Shams from The Athletic going back and forth trying to scoop each other on the picks?
Yeah, I don't love that. I actually had to go away from Twitter because I want to just see how it organically plays out.
Yeah, I know. Like, Schefter talks about how he could do that with the NFL draft. But, I mean, just those two because they're being competitive going back and forth to see who can get it first.
Well, that's the thing. If Shams is going to do it and you're ESPN, you can't say, well, Woj, you can't. Because now everybody learns the information from a different source, from a different party, and Woj looks like he's being beaten out on the stories.
Yeah, and you can't have that happen. Perception is reality in the media. So if you're Woj, you gotta try to do everything you can to put it out there first. But I knew that once I saw the board fall the way that it did, like Patrick Williams to the Bulls and Okoro to the Cavs and then Okongwu to the Hawks, I was like, yeah, the Knicks are going to be in a good spot. Because they're going to get a really good player. Either they're going to get Obi Toppin, who everybody knows because he won Player of the Year at Dayton, mm-hmm. or they're going to get the kid from Israel. Either way, I thought they would be in a good spot. So, I mean, listen, you got to give credit where credit is due. Leon Rose and Walt Perrin, they didn't panic. They stayed pat. They trusted their board. And they got the player that everybody thought was a really good fit for the Knicks. And the only liability that everybody says that the player has on the defensive end, you have a defensive-minded coach in Tom Thibodeau, and Obi Toppin said he's excited about working with him on trying to get that shored up. So to Rick's point, man, the fact that the kid came out and said he wanted to be a Knick and being able to wear that jersey and rep his city means something to him. He's not going to take it for granted. That's the attitude that you want your guys to have. Like, you want players that want to be here. It's got to grow beyond having hostages, actually having willing participants. And it feels like with the last couple of drafts, they're moving in that direction. Think about R.J. Barrett's reaction when he got drafted by the Knicks. He was like, yo, I'm a Knick. He was excited. You saw that same excitement from Obi Toppin. Like, that's what you want. So, like I said, last night, I thought that was a solid draft. Being able to get Obi Toppin at 8, being able to take the 27th pick and turn that into the 25th pick and get Emmanuel Quickley, who won SEC Player of the Year. A guy that's got a lot of experience under Calipari, like, you at a position of need. I think you came out really good last night if you're the Knicks. Maybe not any home runs, but certainly base hits. And that's what I said yesterday the Knicks had to do. They had to go out in that draft last night and get base hits, and I feel like they got 2 base hits.
Yeah, but didn't that feel what this draft was about? Like, there wasn't – I mean, there may not be, you know, a superstar in this draft.
Yeah, I don't think that existed at 1 or 2 or 3. So if you can get the guy that you feel good about at 8, I think you feel really, really good about this day.
Yeah, you have to. And who's more – I mean, who's happier than Clyde right now? Obi Toppin, picking, popping, Obi Toppin. There's no stopping Obi Toppin. This is perfect for Clyde.
You think he was working on that last night right after they picked him?
Has to be. I mean, this is a reason to watch the Knicks. I know we're talking about Russell Westbrook. Gives you a reason. I mean, you love the way he plays. I mean, anyone that's watched Obi Toppin, I mean, he's a walking highlight reel.
Well, Rico. Amari Stoudemire?
If they get a point guard that can throw the ball anywhere near the rim, it's going to be Lob City. Between Toppin and Mitchell Robinson?
Mm-hmm.
Forget about it. Like, oh, yeah, just get it anywhere near the rim. One of those two guys is going to come up with it. Like, having that kind of front court athleticism, that's what the NBA is all about these days. Having guys that can run the floor, having bigs that can space the floor, and from all accounts, Obi Toppin can do that. You know, he's got a solid perimeter game to him. So the fact that you could add that guy and have him with Mitchell Robinson, I just think that they complement each other very well. You just got to have a point guard to be able to orchestrate all of that. So I think that's the missing piece now. That's where all the attention's got to turn in free agency, whether it's via trade or whether you're just going to sign somebody outright. Like, you got to find somebody that can provide some structure for what you're doing on the offensive end, because that's the only way you're going to unlock the potential of all the young players you got.
All right, let's take a listen to Mike Schmitz, our NBA draft analyst on ESPN. Here's his breakdown of Obi Toppin, the player.
Mike Schmitz, player profile.
No player in this draft is more NBA-ready on the offensive end of the floor than Obi Toppin. He's an outstanding rim runner, he can space the floor vertically as a lob catcher, and he shot over 40% from three during his time at Dayton. He's an underrated passer and is going to fit perfectly in the modern NBA on offense. But at 22 years old, there still are questions about his upside and his defensive versatility.
So there you have it. Mike Schmidt's given the breakdown. The most offensive-ready player in this draft is a good thing. Upside is questionable, because I guess the point is, 18, 19 years old, your upside is through the roof. You're 22. This is pretty much, for the most part, I guess, the player you're going to become. But he's a man. You're not drafting an 18, 19-year-old kid here, Rick.
No, and especially under these unique circumstances where, I mean, you're going to barely have a training camp. Like, he's going to get drafted, go into training camp, and then the season starts on December 22nd. So there's not much time. And I was reading a couple different things. I mean, a lot of people have picked Obi Toppin. It's, again, I don't want to put too much pressure on the kid, but as the early favorite to win Rookie of the Year, just because they feel like he's NBA ready. And then 3-point, I would take a quick step back with the 3-point shooting thing too, by the way. I mean, it's not like, I mean, the attempts, just under 2 3-pointers a game. So let's not get overly carried away with the whole 3-point shooting, but.
Yeah, I don't know. Listen, I don't know anything about any of these prospects. I just lean on what Mike Schmitz and Jonathan Givony talk about with these guys. And they're the ones that's privy to all the information. They're not only watching the games, but they're also watching the workouts and listening to what other people around the NBA are saying about the kids. And to me, like, if Obi Toppin is capable of doing all the things that they're saying he's capable of doing, then I think it's something that bodes well for the Knicks. It's another one of those guys that you say could be a piece of the foundation that Leon Rose and his staff are trying to build. So we'll see. I mean, the season's going to be right around the corner. They report the training camp on December 1st.
We're a month away. Yeah, it starts on, what, the 22nd, and today's November 19th?
Yeah.
We're there. We're literally 1 month away from the start of the NBA season. So it's going to happen very quickly. No pun intended there. The point guard, who's supposed to be a very good defensive player, by the way, Chris, out of Kentucky.
Yeah, he is. And Cal was just gushing about him. Now, Cal does that about all of his players, but he put a little extra something on it with Emmanuel Quickley. And the one thing I like about it, Dave, he played 67 games in college. So at a time where you really don't have a lot of data points for these kids, you got solid information on Emmanuel Quickley, as you do with Obi Toppin. He played 64 games.
Right. These are guys that have legitimate college careers.
So you know what you've seen these guys at a higher level of competition other than high school. You know what I mean? So, like, that's the part about it that makes me feel good about what this new regime is trying to do. Again, not trying to hit one out of the park, but just trying to make sure that you get solid guys that could be contributors. Maybe you get surprised by what one of these guys can do if they reach their full potential. But most importantly, they're solid guys, and they're going to be good character guys in your locker room. Like, you're trying to build a culture as well as trying to infuse this roster with talent. And I think the Knicks hit on both fronts with the two guys they took last night.
Yeah, I like the fact that, I mean, you're leaning on people you know and that you trust. Like, I was always, and I know you guys watched it, when they did the piece on Saban and Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that stood out to me was that Nick Saban actually said during that piece is that you'd be surprised at how many players get drafted by teams that he has never heard from. Like, they don't pick up the phone and call Nick Saban and ask about the player that they're going to draft, which makes no sense to me at all. And the fact that, I mean, you bring in a guy like Kenny Payne who coached Emmanuel Quickley and can vouch for him and his character and everything, I think that's important stuff, because you know what you're getting. You're not guessing. You eliminate the guessing.
Yeah.
No, you have a relationship with Cal.
Yes.
I like it.
And Cal had this whole message to Knicks fans. I don't know if you saw this on social media about how you got someone so special and he's going to be a terrific player. The thing that I take with a grain of salt is he does that with every player.
No, I get it. But Kenny Payne coached him, Dave.
I could not feel better after the draft than I do right now. I feel great.
And I also like the fact that you realize, too, the fact that, I mean, you guys just mentioned it. I mean, you're going to report to training camp in a couple weeks, and then, you know, you got, you know, what, 21 days before the season starts, is that you're going to be hard-pressed to rely on a rookie point guard to be ready to contribute immediately.
Oh, 100%.
So yeah. It's better to address that in free agency. We have a veteran guy that can step in and, you know, take advantage of having, you know, OB and R.J. Barrett. It's important. Run your offense, because, I mean, that's the biggest key for this Knicks team, is finding someone that can distribute the basketball in, you know, run the offense, which we haven't had.
So, yeah. If you guys, as Knicks fans, who's the point guard that you guys would want?
That's a great question. You take James Harden. Is he available?
I don't think you're going to get James Harden.
I don't think he's available.
Any way James Harden winds up with the Knicks.
I don't think he's available.
Fred VanVleet's going to cost you a ton of money. I know that's the guy who everyone's kind of looking at. I wouldn't be surprised if it's somebody that Tibbs has had a, you know, previous relationship with, someone that he knows, someone that knows the system. I mean, that could be DJ Augustine. I mean, I think that's the smartest move here, though, is to get a veteran guy, because it's going to be tough for any of these young kids to step right in and have immediate impact.
At point guard, of course it is.
But especially now under these circumstances. I mean, it's a crazy year. Crazy year.
Well, Rick, you said it earlier this week. Point guard is like a quarterback in the National Football League. Like, you got to set other guys up to have success. You're the one that's responsible for getting the most out of the other guys that you're on the court with. And so if you're the Knicks, when you got a bunch of young guys out there, I mean, to have a young point guard, that would be like the blind leading the blind. So to me, whether it's trade or whether it's free agency, you got to find somebody that you have confidence in that can get the ball to the guys in their spots. Like, you got to have somebody that's willing to do it Thibodeau's way, because, again, you are trying to establish the culture, but also somebody that has some savvy, somebody that, you know, understands what you're trying to build with this organization. So I don't know, man. Like, a guy like Fred VanVleet, to me, if you got the money to be able to make that happen, then it makes sense.
Yeah, I would love to bring him in as well.
You know what I mean? He's got championship pedigree. You know, he was with the Toronto Raptors. He's been around winners. He's been around stars.
Still young.
And he's relatively young. He's 26 years old. So, I mean, I just feel like in terms of what you're looking for, like that could be a guy that could help you out. Because he understands what it's like to play in the postseason. He's played in a lot of big games. He's made a lot of big shots. Like, being able to add some of that to your roster makes all the sense in the world.
You can't help but be excited, though. I mean, mm-hmm. Let's be honest.
You have to be.
Yeah, happened last night.
There's no way you could be a fan of the Knicks and not be pleased with what they did. And I'm sure we'll get calls at 800-919-3776 saying, oh, they should have taken Halliburton or they should have taken the kid from Israel. But you're nitpicking now. The Knicks did well last night.
Yeah, but tell me you weren't a little bit nervous.
I'm always nervous when it comes to
that. No, but after you make that pick, you're all excited, right? And even when Malika did the interview with him, it was, you know, he's crying. Like, you could tell how much it meant to him, which I loved. And then all of a sudden, the ninth pick comes. And because I'm so familiar, because I have the Israeli basketball package on the DirecTV.
Some wine cellar he was in, huh?
Dude, they start showing his highlights. You're like, oh, no. Oh, no. Is this guy this good? They're talking about he's the queen on the chessboard because he can play 1 through 4. He can shoot. He can handle. I was like, oh, no. Just our luck.
Listen, but you got to trust it. I mean, you have no choice. Is there a chance that he's better? Sure. Is there a chance that Halliburton is better? Sure.
Well, you don't. Listen, nobody knows, right?
Right.
No one has any idea. The Knicks identified Obi Toppin as the guy that they wanted, and they put themselves in a position to do that. If it was trade up, they could have traded up. Luckily for them, they didn't have to. And they got the two players that they wanted.
And good on them for knowing that they didn't have to and not forcing a trade.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they were patient.
Yeah, but that's not something we talk about all the time with the Knicks.
No, it's not. And they relied on, you know, trusting people that they know, which I think is important when you're drafting young players.
Very much so. All right, let's welcome in some of the callers. 800-919-3776. Let's start out with Chris in Wantagh. Chris, you're first up on 98.7 ESPN.
Dave, don't worry. I'm going to be that guy. We just drafted the younger version of Julius Randle. There's nothing not to like about Obi except the fact that you guys, like, everyone's trying to talk about this guy as a floor spacer. His threes were, like, trying to contest Zion in college. It's pick your poison. Do I get beat in the post, or am I going to give Obi a wide-open three? And the biggest thing is, like you guys are saying, none of this works if we don't have a point guard to run the system. Tyrese Halliburton was the only point guard that ran a system very well, and he fits the best with RJ and Mitch. The problem with Mitch is now he's going to have to protect for another terrible defender, and this is not going to like that. Mitch is going to look really bad next to Obi because Obi lives in the paint. He's not really a floor spacer, and we need more floor spacing. I would have rather had the pick of the point guard instead of having to settle on Quigley, who I like, but he's more of a 2 than a 1. We got to sign Fred VanVleet.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. But here's the thing. Let me just throw this in here. As much as you want to believe that, you know, you make these picks strictly because of fit and, you know, you need a point guard, you love Halliburton, there's more that goes into making a pick.
I get like that,
the fact that the kid's from Brooklyn, I mean, he's box office. I mean, if you've seen the kid play, like, he's an exciting player to watch. That goes into it, too.
Rick, he could be box office and everything, but the fact is we still have Julius on the roster. He's not going to be playing this year. If he does, he's coming off the bench. And regardless, who's running the offense? RJ's going to be dominating the ball a lot more unless we sign Fred VanVleet. We need a point guard to compliment him and to compliment Mitch. Obi does not spread the floor. He's really a 4 or 5 in today's NBA. And he works with a lot of other teams. And to me, like, we need a point guard. Why did we settle on the last point guard available when we had our pick of the point guards? I would have much rather taken a point guard there and then settle with a guy like Jaden McDaniels, a legit 4 spacer, youngest in the draft.
Because I think there was more. I think there was more than just. Listen, I think there was more than just how Obi Toppin fit into the Knicks system.
But he doesn't fit in the system as the one.
Well, I mean, clearly, Tom Thibodeau feels like he can make him fit into the system.
Yes,
and I got to imagine they're going to address
Randle
the.
Already.
Listen. We'll get rid of Julius Randle.
You think Julius Randle's on the long-term plans of the Knicks?
I don't need to see Julius Randle spinning and winning. Listen, we're not even at free agency. We're not even at free agency yet. Let's wait till we get through free agency and see what they do at the point guard position.
You're not going to not take this kid if you really like him because you have Julius Randle sitting there.
No, you're exactly right, Dave. And to the last caller, I don't understand what you think Tyrese Halliburton is going to come in here and do in year one. Like, I mean, the jump from college to pro is way bigger than the jump from high school to college. Like, there's a huge learning curve that comes with playing in the NBA. So, I mean, I get it. He balled at Iowa State. I hear everything that you're talking about, and you're referring to all the scouting reports that you're seeing everybody put out there. But, I mean, ultimately, you have to manage your expectations when it comes to rookies, especially a rookie point guard. I just don't understand how you can sit here and say that Tyrese Halliburton is going to be the difference in the Knicks taking this quantum leap in the first year of Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau versus the decision they made to draft Obi Toppin. I can't sit here and say that. And we don't know what they're going to do in free agency. We have no idea.
They know they need a point guard. They know they need a point guard desperately. If they loved Halliburton and thought that he was the clear answer, the future point guard, you don't think they would have taken him?
Of course they would have taken him, Dave. Of course they would have. How many years have we been talking about the Knicks needing a point guard? They would have taken him.
Forever. I mean, it's
they feel like Obi Toppin is going to fit. Obi Toppin fits what they want to do. Like, we have right now, we don't know what the Knicks are trying to do. We have no idea. We don't know what system Tom Thibodeau wants to run. We don't know what their basketball philosophy is going to be. We don't know how they want to build this thing. We don't. But we'll start to get answers when they start playing games, and we'll get more answers, obviously, in the next couple of days with free agency. But, I mean, we don't know. There's a lot of question marks. So to sit here and criticize what they're doing at this juncture just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, this is the first step of the plan. Like, we haven't even seen what the plan hasn't even...
And it's a full plan, Rick.
Well, no, it's a full plan. And again, would I have been upset if we took Tyrese Halliburton? No. I like the Vassell kid, too. It concerns me that the Spurs drafted him, because I'm sure he's going to be great. I mean, that's just what happens with the Spurs. But this is the guy that they wanted, and they got him. So be happy for now, and then we'll see what happens in free agency.
Yes, and in 3 years or 2 years or halfway through the season, if Halliburton is putting up 11 assists a game and looks like a star point guard, then you have reason to be upset. But I don't think that's validated right now. I don't. Let's go back to the calls. John,
yeah, but all
in
anyone,
Queens.
But Dave, as good as R.J. Barrett could be, all people did was complain that they didn't see enough from R.J. Barrett. That, I don't think that's going to be the case with Obi Toppin.
I hope not.
Like, well, I feel like
R.J. Barrett's also 18 years old, Rick. This kid's 22.
I get it. In the Knicks, I mean, everyone wants the Knicks to be relevant, right? And it's probably, we'll see what happens in free agency, not going to be because they're competing for the playoffs or winning a bunch of games. But if you turn the TV on, and we're talking about Obi Toppin potentially winning Rookie of the Year because he's a 22-year-old kid that can step in and jump out of the gym and through your television screen. I mean, for me, that's a reason why I would tune in. That excites me. Take a step back. Nobody knows yet how this thing is going to play out. Like, once we go through free agency and everything else, then maybe you have a clearer picture and you can start to be, you know, negative if you choose to be negative.
Right.
Like,
I can't imagine Frank Ntilikina is going to be your starting point guard to start the season.
No.
I find that very difficult.
No, I don't
see
that either.
So just, you know what? It's a brand new regime. And I understand the Knicks fan has been beaten up and battered over the years. It's a brand new regime. Take a minute and let's see what they can do. John in Queens, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I just want to make a few points about the Knicks real quick. So, first of all, I heard Woj on the Zubin and Jay Will show prior to this one saying that the Knicks are going to be looking to keep their cap flexibility over the next three free agencies or so. So my idea is we opt in on Elfrid Payton, give him the $8 million next year. You know, he's 26. He can run the point. He's a pass-first type of guy. Second, I wanted to say that I'm really happy that we were able to get Obi at eight, and we didn't have to give any assets up, especially considering that, you know, during the day, that's all we heard is the Knicks want Obi and they're willing to move up. The Cavs could have easily taken something from us there, you know, because they ended up taking Okoro at five. And then lastly, I want to say to the caller that spoke before this, I'm just like you guys where I don't know much about these players, but I'll go watch the tape afterwards. And for me, I think Jay Billis was spot on when he called Obi Toppin and Amari Stoudemire 2.0 from what we saw in those highlights. I mean, the kid's incredible. I'm really excited about this regime because I think Leon Rose passes the test for the first day. What do you guys say?
We all agree. I mean, if you're going to beat up what the Knicks did after day one, you're just looking for, and thanks for the call, John, you're looking to be negative.
Yeah, but you hear this too, right? Like, I mean, this has to, if you're smart and you're Leon Rose and you're Coach Thibs and you're sitting in a room, right, deciding what you want to do, the overwhelming thought coming out of last night's draft was that the safest pick for the New York Knicks to make at 8 was Obi Toppin, right? Because at 22, he can step in and immediately play at this level. Like that, you're hearing people that we just got through the draft and we've had how many callers already criticizing the decisions? Like, they don't trust the Knicks. So if God forbid,
I understand that.
It's fair. That's fair.
Which is fair. So God forbid you draft somebody that's going to take a couple years to pop. I mean, well, you're not doing yourself any favors. Like, you're just confirming to people you know what you're doing if Obi Toppin steps on the court and he flashes.
There's going to be highlights with Obi Toppin on the
court. Exactly
right. There's going to be highlights. There's going to be lobs. There's going to be tip dunks. He's going to do things athletically that will give fans a lot of hope on his potential upside. There's no question about that in my mind. So I don't understand. To your point, Rick, if you're going to take this approach where it's going to be a slow build, you got to have some kind of excitement coming to the Garden. And Obi Toppin would provide some of those plays where you're like, man, it's exciting. I want to go watch the Knicks play.
And how do you not buy in? He's a New York kid, too. He's from Brooklyn.
And he wants to be here. He wants to be here, Rick.
That's important when you're making those decisions, too. And I think it just would confirm to people, because I think you realize when you take this job, if you're Leon Rose, that there's already by nature a mistrust from the fan base, is that if you get a New York kid that steps on the floor and has an immediate impact, people will pull back a little bit and say, okay, maybe we should trust what Leon Rose is doing here. Maybe this guy does know what he's doing.
Yes.
Because we've been burned so many times. I get it. I understand why people are hesitant. But, I mean, that's just, you're wasting your energy, man. That's just, all you're doing is wasting your energy. There's no reason to be negative yet. None.
But it's, you're so conditioned. Like, and I think you're right, but I do understand the other side. This team, Rick, for 20 years has been the laughingstock for the most part of the NBA. Think about that. The Jets have done this for 10 years, and every time we talk about them, it pains you. The Knicks are double that time.
Yeah, but at least you got a kid now. Remember when Kevin Durant said that this younger generation doesn't realize the Knicks were ever good?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, the Knicks aren't cool. This kid does. This kid realizes how important it is to put that jersey on.
And that probably has a lot to do with his dad, too.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's important, man. That's important. And the fact that he's going to have an immediate impact,
stories.
He's going to be box office. I loved how listen, that interview after he got drafted, for me, that sealed the deal.
Like, you saw a lot of that, though, last night, didn't you? A lot of guys, maybe I'm wrong. I don't remember this many just emotional immediately after being drafted interviews where the kid can barely speak and is.
Well, you're at home. I think it's different. You're at home.
Yeah.
Right? Everyone's, and you're going through so much. I mean, how can you not be emotional with what's going on?
And it never gets old. Like, I never watch a guy who breaks down or the mother's crying next to him or the dad is, you know, hysterical and think to myself, oh, I've seen enough of this. Do you feel like it never gets old to me? I could watch that over and over and over.
Yeah, I could watch it too, Dave.
You realize this is the culmination of tens and thousands of hours of practice and games, and it's finally you're realizing your dream.
It's also the sacrifice the parents make, too.
Sure.
I mean, that's a big part of this, too. It's all of it. And finally, you feel like, I mean, your kid, just think about that, though. I mean, can you imagine sitting next to your kid and your kid, I mean, the second his name is announced, has achieved something that he's talked about his entire life, like in that moment?
No.
Like, think how many times, like, I remember, I don't know if this ever happened to Chris, like, remember, like, when you were in, like, grade school or high school and the teacher asked you, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
Like, I want to be a professional hockey player. And the teacher's like, nah, I don't know about that. Maybe you should think about something else.
Yeah, or just all the teachers or people that said that you weren't going to ever amount to anything. Yeah. I don't have a laminated list like Michael Kay, but I do remember those people.
People told you you weren't going to amount to anything?
Oh, yeah, Dave.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I'm sure Rick had some teachers or somebody along the way that told him the same damn thing.
Yeah, when I got caught with the whole sexual bookmark thing.
Well, that wasn't exactly your finest moment.
I don't know if the math teacher thought I would amount to much.
But he's a kid, though, Dave. That's all I'm saying. He's a kid.
Like, I can never imagine telling a kid you're never going to amount to anything.
It happens.
That's a terrible
more than you
thing
think.
To
do. Yeah.
Terrible thing to do.
But just being able to have that dream realized, though, to your point, Dave, all the work that you put in, all the sacrifices that your friends and family make in order to lift you up so you can chase after it, to have it actually pop, to have it actually come true. Like, that's where you see the overwhelming emotion. And it'll never get old.
And I see it from the parent side because, Rick, all you want for your kids is what they want for themselves, right? Like, is for them to succeed.
No, that's it.
And that's all you want.
Whatever, and to whatever watch, it takes.
To watch the kids with their parents who've clearly been unbelievably supportive, and to watch the parent go through this moment of, oh my God, what my child has worked for, from what my son has worked for, has finally materialized into this. It's got to be indescribable. And you see how they react. So it must be.
Well, just think about that. I mean, how many people from, you know, the time they actually understand what's going on, you know, say, this is what I want to be, actually achieve that when it's all said and done? Not many.
Very few.
Very, very few.
Very few.
Can set a goal like that and then all of a sudden, you know, reach that goal. I mean, for anything. Anything you decide to do, like when that moment hits, like even like my sister-in-law, right? She said from the time she knew what was going on, what do you want to be? I want to be a doctor. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a doctor. When she finally realized that dream, I mean, it's emotional, man.
And it should
be. You put all that work, all that time, all that effort.
It should
all the things that could go wrong leading up to you trying to achieve that, and you find a way to get through it and yep. realize it, awesome.
Yeah, you got to appreciate the journey, and that's what happened. You saw very, very often last night. So we got to set the lineup as far as guests are concerned today. Emmanuel quickly at 11:30 on Bart and Han. Anthony Grant, the head coach of Obi Toppin at Dayton, will join their show at 12, and then Obi will be on the K show at 3:30. But I think it's fair to say they all pale in comparison to who we have on right now, and that is covering the Giants, as nobody else can, the great Jordan Renan. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, guys. There's the introduction I'm looking for. Good thing you're doing it, not Rick.
I called you an Oscar Award winner. I mean, what's better than that? What do you want, an EGOT? Relax. Maybe that's next time. I got to Google big noses.
Oh, jeez. All right, can we please? Jordan, What happened yesterday? I mean, took us all by surprise. Then you have reports, which apparently are not true, that there was a fist fight. But you tell us what happened yesterday.
Well, I heard from about a handful of people on this right now, right? So here's what I know about it at this point. The fact that this went down and that Mark Colombo's not there coaching anymore is not necessarily a surprise. What is a surprise is that it happened in the middle of the season. Right, because like there's been incidents I heard from a couple people like on the field, right, where two of them, you know, Joe Judge and Mark Colombo had a clear difference of opinion, and it didn't go over well. But the final straw appeared to be that they were hiring Dave DiGuglielmo.
Goose.
Good luck with that.
They're hiring Goose.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm surprised
I really
didn't put
Goose.
In a read of mine today.
I know I botched it. So yeah, so they're hiring Goose, and they don't really, you know, everybody seemed to know about it, right? But Colombo probably knew about it too then. But then when he goes into Joe Judge and Joe Judge finally tells him on Tuesday night, it doesn't go well. And while there might not have been fist thrown, and everybody denies there was a physical confrontation, it was definitely a verbal confrontation, a nasty one, with lots and lots of name calling. And when you do that, you know, you're not going to, it's going to be hard to keep your job. If you're the offensive line coach and you're the one doing a lot of the name calling towards the head coach, because clearly there was a difference of opinion there. I don't think Joe Judge was happy with the way his coaching technique, from what it sounds like. And because you think about it, Andrew Thomas is the number 4 overall pick. He's been kind of a mess this year, right? He gave up 4 pressures the other day in that Eagles game, and we're all like, hey, he played pretty well. You know, like that's a success at this point. So I think that played a part in it, and Colombo didn't appreciate the head coach kind of being so hands-on and, you know, looking over his shoulder, and somebody that Colombo thinks, you know, doesn't have the offensive line knowledge that he does. And then to bring in Goose, you know, he pretty much recognized what the writing was going to be on the wall, even if it wasn't going to be mid-season. So, yeah, it went down, and it came close, from what I understand, to being a physical confrontation, but it didn't actually get there because, let's be honest, Mark Colombo still wants to collect that paycheck.
Yeah, Jordan, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, there were some reports out there that, I mean, is it Joe Judge has been more hands-on over the last couple of weeks with the offensive line? Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that's happened. I think that was, you know, that's why it reached this point, because he was fiddling with the offensive line a lot. I don't think Colombo took it well. Looked at it in a way of like Joe Judge trying to get control over that too. Like, you know, he He is very hands-on coach. He has control of a lot of things. So I don't think Colombo appreciated that he was so hands-on in recent weeks, thinking that somebody, you know, who really doesn't have an offensive line background is coming and you know, teaching him about techniques. When the whole Googe thing, I think, was just like the final straw of, like, tension that was building. Because what I heard is that the two of them have been going at it on the practice field on multiple occasions. You know, and that there's players that have seen it.
So, Jordan, and let me ask you that question, because you talked about how everybody in the organization, the coaching staff, people in the front office knew that Joe Judge was moving toward hiring Googe as an offensive consultant. I find it hard to believe that Colombo would react this way if this is something that he knew was coming. Like, it just seems like this is something that was sprung on him.
Well, you guys still there?
Do you hear me? Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay. Right, that's
bated point. Breath, Jordan. We're waiting on your response.
What about this? What if he knew it was coming and he saw, you know, he had already heard that Googe was going to be hired, right? But he was insulted that Joe Judge hadn't told him yet. So he had to hear about it.
Well, either way, that's a problem, though, don't you think? I mean, communication is supposed to be one of those things that's clear within the organization, right? Joe Judge wants to talk about accountability. No. In order to have accountability, you got to have communication. So if you're not talking to one of your coaches about a move, go ahead, Jordan.
Kind of what happened here is that it was a communication breakdown, and that's kind of why it built up to the point where it almost ended up in a fist fight. I mean, that's pretty much what happened here. I mean, this is kind of, if you think about it, this is kind of the first crack in Joe Judge, right? The first little knock that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that this happened on his watch in the middle of the year isn't a great thing. I don't care if he was going to be fired eventually or not. It's not a good thing to do it. There's 10 weeks into the season.
Jordan, I never seen it.
Now you have to have a new line coach just jump right in.
Jordan, I never seen this. 11 years in the NFL, on any of my teams, I've never seen a position coach fired in the middle of the year. Like, I was in Baltimore, and Will Montgomery almost fought John Harbaugh. Listen, Jordan, I'm in Baltimore with the Ravens, a functional organization. Will Montgomery, the running backs coach, almost fought John Harbaugh on the practice field. All the players saw it. Will Montgomery was still on staff. Now, he moved on after the season and went to Cleveland. But I've never seen a position coach fired in the middle of the season. The position coach spends more time with the players than any other coaches. So yeah, how is this going to play with the guys on the offensive line and the players in the locker room?
You know what this says to me, and I know this to be true. This team's goal right now is to build something for the future. They're not looking at this year like we have to get it right this year. Like, Joe Judge is using this again as another opportunity to show the program that he's building and what he wants this team to look like moving forward. And that means accountability and everybody being on board, like he said, whether it's players or coaches. Now, whether it's the right or wrong thing, you can debate that, I guess. But that's what he's doing here. They're not short-sighted. I will give him credit for that. This is they're not being short-sighted because, oh, hey, we're in a division race. Even though they're 3-7, they don't have any, you know, at least Joe Judge doesn't have any ideas of grandeur that they're going to be making this playoff run. I know they're building something for the future. And if that meant him having to fire Mark Colombo, because I think it did probably, you know, it went over the point, I think, where he could keep him. Because remember, that was his plan, was to keep Mark Colombo here, but just have Googe serve as a consultant. And I think it kind of just blew up to the point where he felt like he just couldn't do it. He couldn't stand up there and have the respect of the rest of his staff if he let, you know, his offensive line coach completely, you know, MF him to death and then almost get physical with him.
Wow. Crazy stuff. Jordan, we appreciate you giving us a little bit of a breakdown. Giants off this week, but we'll talk to you as they get ready for this big battle against the Cincinnati Bengals right after Thanksgiving. Good stuff. We'll talk to you, Jordan.
Always fun, guys. Have a good one.
All right. There you have it. So almost came to blows, it sounds like.
Did anyone actually see it? Like, were any of the players, I mean, they're on their bye. Did any of the players actually see it?
Well, here's the thing, Rico. The way the building is set up, if they got into an argument in the coaches' offices, none of the players would have seen it. Even the guys in the training room getting treatment wouldn't have seen it because that's upstairs. So, this is crazy to me, man. I've never I've never seen something like this where a position coach is fired after an altercation, either verbal or physical, in the middle of the year.
Let me ask you a question, Chris, and I'm not trying to be a jerk, and I just don't know. Is this that big a deal?
Well, yeah, Dave, because the offensive line is going to have a whole a new personality in Gouge that they're going to have to be working with. Like, you spend more time with your position coach than anybody else in the building. So, yeah, this is a big deal in terms of where the Giants are at and where that group is at specifically, because they had their best two games of the season in the last 2 weeks. So the fact that that group was trending up going into the bye week, and then you have this kind of disruption,
yeah, but
I can't imagine it being a positive thing. Now, I could be wrong. Joe Judge has been spending more time working with the group, but just the way that all of this went down, I find it hard to believe that Mark Colombo knew this was coming. Like, I played with Colombo down in Dallas, so I know the man. So the fact that, you know, he got so heated that it led to this kind of altercation where they felt like they had no other choice but to let him go, it feels like he was blindsided. It kind of feels weaselly to me. That's what it feels like. Now, I know that, you know, Colombo is more Jason Garrett's guy than Joe Judge's guy, but, I mean, I like, something about this doesn't smell right to me.
Yeah, maybe he was looking for a reason, though. I mean, the reports I heard was that Joe Judge over the last 2 weeks has been more involved with the offensive line.
Yeah, we all saw those, yep.
Well, and that's part of the reason why the offensive line apparently has been better the last couple weeks. And if this is, I mean, if this is a relationship that this isn't the first time they've gone back and forth on the practice field, like the
or the offensive line could just be better because they've had more time to play together, because you didn't have any preseason games, because training camp was altered.
My point is this. If this isn't the first time that these two have got into a back and forth, then I would be led to believe that Joe Judge was looking for an opportunity just to get rid of him.
Yeah, and that's fine, Rick, and that's fine. I'm with you on that. But nobody in the NFL does this. This is not commonplace, firing position coaches in the middle of the year. This does not happen. So to me, it feels like Joe Judge, in a roundabout way, undermined Mark Colombo. Is that the right thing to do?
Well, I mean, if it benefits the team, I mean, I would hope that he has an idea of how the offensive line is going to react to losing.
And that's the biggest thing, Rico. That's what we got to wait to see. I mean, if the offensive line comes out and they continue to play the way that they did the last 2 weeks, this will be a blip on the radar. It will be.
Yeah.
But if they come out and they struggle, you go to Cincinnati and you lose that game, and the offensive line plays bad against a defense that nobody plays bad against, then there's going to be some question marks. Then there's going to be some concern. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, so like
it's all about the result with this. All I'm simply saying is, based on my experience and being around the game, like I've never seen or heard about anything like this where the organization and the coaching staff felt like they had to part ways with a position coach in the middle of the year. That's not normal.
No, it's probably not normal, but I think initially, I mean, the first problem being that it's more Jason Garrett's guy than it is Joe Judge's guy. So if Joe Judge felt like he needed to bring his guy in and Colombo didn't make him feel like they would work well together, or he wasn't even to allow it to work, then, I mean, do you really have a choice?
I mean, you give the man the respect and let him finish the season. I don't... Again, like I said, I was on the practice field in Baltimore when Will Montgomery, Dave, you remember him, the former running back from the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah.
He literally told John Harbaugh, "I was waiting on an opportunity to do this. I want a whole truckload of you." Those were his words. He wanted to fight the head coach in front of the players in practice, and they didn't fire him on the spot. So I guess all I'm saying is, this is something that doesn't happen. And the position coach is important because he's the coach that's the first touch point for the organization with the player. The position coach spends more time than anybody on the staff with the player, save maybe the strength coach. So that's the part that doesn't feel right to me. This feels strange.
Well, obviously he didn't feel like the time that Colombo was spending with the offensive line was doing the offensive line any good then. Because otherwise, why would you? I mean, you wouldn't let an argument. If he thought Mark Colombo was best fit to do that job with how important the offensive line is to Andrew Thomas, who you used the fourth overall pick on, and more importantly, your young quarterback. I mean, if you thought he was the best at what he does, then, I mean, I'm not letting an argument, you calling me a whatever, that's not going to make me fire you. It has to be based on you think Mark Colombo was good.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it has to be based on merit. You're absolutely right. But just as a professional courtesy, I've never seen head coaches fire position coaches, especially in their first year when they just put the coaching staff together.
Yeah.
I've never seen that happen.
This guy, the one thing we can say is what he wants, he's strong about it, and he's going to do what he wants to do. And whether it makes him look bad or bad reputation or now he's unliked by Colombo or that regime from the Cowboys, whoever, he doesn't care. He's going to do what he wants to do.
Maybe Colombo wanted to be fired, too. He's going to still get paid. And as long as he didn't... I mean,
oh, yeah, clearly.
Nothing physical happened.
Like, Rico, once that happened, once you take it there, like, there's no question that he wanted to be fired.
And there's certain words, too. I mean, there's certain words you decide you want to use.
Kim Jones said it was the dirtiest word
if you're looking
in
for a
English
certain
language.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, no. Interesting stuff with the Giants.
Don't lay out, Dave. Keep pushing, Dave.
How much time we got? How much time before break? Because we got Andy coming up.
Now.
Okay.
I mean, he's
no, this reminds me. No, this just reminds me of a story. We're in the locker room, and Milbury came in, and he had a speech. And he's going back and, like, just ripping us, like, destroying us. And he looked at one of the coaches. I'm not going to tell you his name. He goes, this was one of the assistant coaches. And what do you think? Do you have an opinion? And we're like, please don't say anything. And he's like, well, yeah, maybe if you got off the head coach's back and let him coach, we'd have more success. I was like, oh, no, he said it.
And that was it, right? He got fired?
No, he didn't get fired, but Mike was like, oh, let me think about that. That seems like a good idea. F-U-F, like right in his face. F-U-O. Dude, we were like, oh, my God. He's going to punch him right now. It was crazy. I get so awkward in those situations. Like, I don't know if I should laugh. Like, I don't know what to do. It was awesome.
You start crazy weeping from a fright.
Please don't say it. We're like, no, don't say it. We like you too much. Don't. And he said it.
All right, the Michael Kay Show. The Michael Kay Show's 2020 contest continues today, 3 o'clock. They actually had a hard one yesterday. Don didn't know it. He's very upset by it. The Michael Kay Show has talked to the biggest sports celebrities in the game over the years. All you have to do is recognize their voice. Make sure you're listening for your chance at 20 great prizes over 20 days to make your home life a little bit more enjoyable. Today, the guys are giving away a Weber charcoal smoker. It's the 2020 contest brought to you by PC Richard and Son, Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian, Premium Cocktails on Demand, and 98.7 ESPN.
You ever smoke meat?
I don't know what I'm supposed to
say. No, I've never smoked meat before.
Did you smoke that brisket? No, I smoked a brisket. Nice turkey.
I'm getting yelled at. We got to go. We'll be back.
That's cooking it low and slow. I didn't smoke it.
He needs no introduction at this point. He is Andy from America. Morning, Andy.
This is unbelievable.
Maybe he does need an introduction. Good morning, Andy.
Abe, it's Thursday.
It sure is, Andy.
College football.
Now, Andy, let me just tell you, I don't know whether Santiago didn't have you potted up or what happened. We didn't get the normal introduction we have. If you could do it again.
Well, let me reboot it, and I'll say good morning, DCR.
I love it every time.
This Saturday night, ABC, ESPN, Herb Street and the boys will be broadcasting the Bedlam series, Oklahoma State against Oklahoma. So where else am I going to go but Norman, Oklahoma, for your Oklahoma Sooners football questions. Starting with the Sooner Schooner, their mascot, is a covered wagon. Can you name the two white ponies that pull that wagon?
Chris.
Usually you call them Moyle. If you got a covered
wagon. I have no idea, Andy. I'm out on this one.
Come on, Dave.
I have no idea.
Boomer and Sooner.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous question. You should be embarrassed.
So after the chant, Boomer Sooner? Okay.
There we go.
Nice.
All right.
Okay.
Oklahoma's had seven, count them, seven Heisman Trophy winners. Can you name just four of them?
Kyler Murray. Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield.
Two.
Bradford.
Bradford's three.
Billy Sims.
That's four.
Jason White.
Five.
I think Steve Owens.
That's sufficient.
Steve Owens is six, and you'll never get Billy Vessels from 1952. He's the Tommy Nobis of Oklahoma. Who is, speaking of Oklahoma Sooners, their career rushing yards leader?
You think it could be Peterson, Chris?
No, it's Samaje Perine.
CeCe, my man, get down. Wow. 4 yards more than Billy Sims. And finally, the Sooners' all-time sack leader with 31.5, career sacks. Dave's going to hold his nose on this one.
No, this is going to be a Cowboy. Or, oh, God, don't. It's going to be Cedric Jones.
It is Cedric Jones, possibly the worst draft pick in Giants history.
Didn't they find out after they drafted him he was blind in one eye?
All I know is they passed on Ray Lewis for that pick, and boy, did that not work out well.
Oh, God. I think
go ahead.
No, I was going to say thank you, Andy, but go ahead.
Happy 71st birthday to the original Hail Mary recipient, Ahmad Rashad.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.